If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
Hey everybody, as you can tell in this video, my audio is coming from this mic, which sounds decent, fine. What you will notice as soon as this short segment is over, it sounds like I'm in a fishbowl, and that's because I did not realize my microphone was coming from my webcam. So there's been a lot of problems with our audio past, and I apologize. Hopefully in the future it will be better, and I think it has been better the past couple podcasts, but I do apologize. You don't get the sultry tones of my voice. Sorry, guys.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. I'm Cheng Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. Also, you can find my work at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Cheng_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on Twitter at halfwall_hockey, at my website half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. This week, Cheng, it was a good week. Let's talk about it.
We're going to talk about the week that was for the Sharks and the importance of not writing off players too early.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to leave those players up until the a little bit later, so it's a little bit of a preview or a sneak peek. I'm going to go into a little rant about why I'm happy and why I'm wearing a Sharks jersey this week. This is the second week in a row that I'm wearing a Sharks jersey. The Sharks, since we've last had this podcast, went 1-2. They won one game, lost two. They lost.
It's state of the Sharks that they're 1-2, and Keegan is happy with that.
I'm super happy. Here's why. So they lost to Anaheim. Not a good game. Sharks didn't look great. Pretty typical of this season. But they lost to a team that might be closer to us in the standings towards the end of the year, possibly. Although Anaheim is, I think, 9-7 right now or something like that.
I don't think it's going to be close.
Yeah, well, not close to us in like terms of actual points, but maybe in the draft lottery. Anyway, but that matters in the end of this whole thing. So they lost to a team that is a good thing to lose to. They lost to Florida, but they made it entertaining and they made it exciting.
They did.
There was some pushback. They had a lead late in the game. Crazy stuff. And then they won against St. Louis in dominating fashion. So all of that, plus they called up Daniil Gushin this week, which we'll talk about. All of that makes me a happy Sharks fan for the week. And that's why they get a jersey this week. Probably not next week, but this one they do. How do you feel, Shang?
I'm glad that the action is competitive. I almost passed out when the Sharks took a 5-0 lead. And I'm glad that I was able to stay awake for that.
I know. It felt like an actual functioning team trying to close out. Like they were getting outshot heavily towards the end of the game, but it felt like they were trying to close out a win.
Yep.
It's just weird. Unexpected. It felt like a preseason game almost. It was very strange.
Well, St. Louis, yeah. They definitely didn't look like they really showed up there. So.
Mm-hmm. But we do have, like we normally do, we're going to start with some news of the week. It's basically just some more big picture stuff that's happened with the Sharks this week. So let's start with one. Nico Sturm. What's going on with Nico Sturm?
Well, the Sharks announced today that Nico is going on personal leave, and he's going to take the next two games off, Vancouver and Seattle. First, Nico Sturm has been on this show before, friend of the show. So, Nico, I hope whatever you're going to, I hope all is well. Best wishes from both Keegan and myself. In terms of the roster aspect of it, the Sharks are able to make Keegan, there's an exception that he can be a non-roster player. So, basically, the Sharks can call somebody up in Nico's place. And so I think the question now that we're trying to figure out is who will the Sharks call up?
Yeah, and hey, like you said, wishing Nico the best. It's, you know, and obviously he's going to be respectful of his privacy. Nico's been kind of a heart and soul guy for this team this year. And he, you know, trying hard every single shift. And I think he's actually played pretty well over the past couple of games as well. So wish him the best. And you're right. Let's talk about who maybe they could call up. And one guy that's already up for 10 games with the Sharks is Ryan Carpenter. He's played 10 games, but it doesn't feel like he's played 10 games. I don't know about you.
Well, Ryan is just kind of, he's a pro. And David Quinn had a terrific quote yesterday about Ryan Carpenter. And essentially, the quote just says that Ryan always tries to play the right way. And he's the kind of guy that doesn't, here, this is exactly what David said. A lot of times guys, when a shift ends and nothing good happens, they're disappointed. Ryan takes a lot of pride in playing the right way. He'll come off the ice and nothing has happened and he feels good because sometimes that's a good shift. And David Quinn is 100% right about that. Sometimes, you know, live to fight another day, that kind of shift. Like that's how you get along in a game. You win some shifts, I think you've used the phrase net zero. You kind of even, you're even on a shift to other team and you try to lose as few shifts as possible. And that's how it is. You're not going to win every shift.
Yep.
You're not going to lose every shift. And so players like Ryan are valuable because they're the kind of guys that they just kind of keep churning and they play this consistent game and they're predictable and they don't hurt you. And sometimes they do help you, which Ryan obviously has been doing the last couple of games, grabbed a couple of assists against the Blues yesterday. And then against Edmonton, his work was helped spring Nico Sturm and Filip Zadina for the game winning goal against the Oilers. And Ryan's been, also, he's been on the PK. Granted, PK hasn't been great, but I wouldn't say that's, you know, that's on Ryan by any stretch.
Sure.
And so I think a guy like Ryan is just a professional center, NHL center. And it doesn't sound like much, but it is really important. I think actually Ryan might be playing himself into a degree of value at the trade deadline. Not going to get a lot, obviously, but can a winning team use them as perhaps a 13th, 14th forward and trade a little something for that? Maybe. He's also a center too, like we mentioned, and so that's extra valuable during the playoffs. But in terms of just who the Sharks call up in place of Sturm for the next couple of games, I think it is going to be a very interesting question because Gushin was sent down today, but the expectation, I think the thought is that it's just because the Barracuda are playing for a couple of games and the Sharks are off until Tuesday. And so they're going to call Gushin right back up. But and they can just actually ride with that because with Gushin, they still have LeBanc with scratch, but they can just put LeBanc back in the lineup. So they have 12 forwards out there. But the big question, though, is we talk about, again, Ryan Carpenter being the center position. There is no clear center to take Sturm's place. One candidate internally on the Sharks roster right now could be a Cunnan. Cunnan has played some center
over the
years. Not really with the Sharks though. Cunnan has taken some faceoffs on the PK too. And so he's a guy that might be able to fill in. Actually, I think it was last year when Nick Bonino was the Sharks' third line center, and a scout told me that he thought that the Sharks would just put Cunnan at third line center because he thought that Cunnan would make more of an impact on both sides of the ice than Bonino did or would. And so I thought that was interesting that a scout kind of mentioned that to me, that thought. So Cunningham would be a natural guy, but he isn't normally a center. What is missing though on a Barracuda right now though is sort of an ideal center to take kind of the role that Sturm does. Not that you need an exact carbon copy of Sturm, but the guys playing center at the Barracuda, like obviously Thomas Bordalo, like I'm not sure he might get a chance because he is the Barracuda's top center, but it's sort of a question mark just how he would fit.
Yeah, I think that would be hard pressed to find. I don't know. I think it would be weird for them to have both Gushin and Bordalo on the team at the same time. Not that they don't, not that they couldn't maybe inject some offense, but I think it would be weird. If anything, I think they would maybe call up Bordalo instead of Gushin. But that's only because of the center position being vacant. But either way, I don't think that's very likely. I think you're right in the fact that they might just move Cunningham to center on the third line, keep Carpenter on the fourth line, Granlund second, and Hurdle on line one as their center depth for a couple of games. Mm-hmm. And then rotate Gushin in and out if necessary, kind of thing. I think that's probably what they'll do.
Maybe.
Because you're right, there's not a really natural fit. I think Justin Bailey's playing good hockey for the Barracuda, but he's a winger.
Well, they also have to sign him too, because he signed to the Barracuda.
Yeah, so they'd have to sign him and move him up.
Yeah, but they could. They did that with Pouliot last year, basically.
Yeah, and he is playing like one of the Barracuda's best players. So there's that.
Yeah, I've heard from people who really like Bailey that they think that Bailey actually will end up with the Sharks this year. Maybe that will happen. I don't know. We will see. Maybe Bordalo will get another shot. You've mentioned that you've liked in the last couple games with the Barracuda. Showing a little more sort of a compete and that sort of thing, right? The things that he needs to work on. So maybe they will just have a more offensive a third line with Bordalo and kind of shape around that. Like maybe put a Cun in there because they've had next to a Sturm the last couple of games, Zadina and Hoffman.
Sure.
And I'm not really seeing a Zadina, Bordalo, Hoffman. I don't know if
that sounds scary.
I think all of David Quinn's A Beautiful Hair will probably fall off.
Yes, it will. Yeah.
And so my guess is that wouldn't be a line, but you can call up a Bordalo and then maybe put like a Cunningham next to him, so you have a little more defensive awareness. And something like that. So that's a possibility. You mix and match a little bit. How about a guy like Peterson? You're not seeing it?
Not really. But that's a good point too. I didn't really think about Peterson just because he hadn't looked great when he got called up.
He wasn't great as a center. When he was called up.
I don't know. Not terribly impressed with his play so far at the Barracuda. Yeah, with the Cuda. But okay. Yeah, I think Bordalo has been more impressive offensively. And then someone like Bailey has like a more of a well-rounded pro style game, I think, right now. Sure. So I don't know. It's kind of like the
I don't know. Yeah, that's a bad answer.
The last it's like the deck chairs in the Titanic, like once you get this many injuries, which the Sharks have like five dudes on injured reserve, and then Sturm is on non-roster for the personal reasons. So it's like a lot of guys that are out right now for varying reasons, varying time frames, but I think going back to Carpenter a little bit, net zero is a good way to put him, but I think he's shown just why he is valuable right now, because if the Sharks didn't have him, they really don't have any center depth
I think he definitely has really kind of stabilized the position. We talked about the Bordalo versus Carpenter kind of why Carpenter makes more sense in the NHL right now, and I think we're kind of seeing it. We talk about the net zero, but if a guy is mostly net zero but he does a couple of good things in the game, a couple of positives, then he's actually becomes a more obviously more of a positive
he's
player. And that's what
Carpenter's done. Leading the Sharks in plus minus at zero.
At zero, yeah. He and Daniil Gushin are at even, and so yeah. So he's also net zero and plus minus too.
Carpenter's always been one of my favorite Sharks players because he's also from my neck of the woods. He's from Central Florida.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's always been one of my guys to follow ever since his first tour with the Sharks. But
oh, I want to add one thing about Carpenter too. That I want to talk to him more about this. So I dealt with Ryan 5 years ago when I was covering the Golden Knights, their expansion year. If you guys remember, the Sharks waived Ryan Carpenter in 2017-18. The Golden Knights picked him up. And actually, Ryan went on a little bit of a goal-scoring spree. I think he had like 9 goals in maybe 36 games or something like that. Some pretty good NHL numbers for him. But anyway, he kind of settled in as a pretty good fourth-line center for the Golden Knights, a team that went to the final. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking with Ryan a few times that season, and he didn't show a lot of personality. And I actually spoke with a colleague who covered Ryan back when he was with the Barracuda in his early day with the Sharks, so 6 years ago or whatever, right? Said the same thing, that back then Ryan was just your typical-ish young player who didn't seem to want to make waves and that sort of thing, right? And Ryan has come back, and he has a lot of personality that he didn't really show before, kind of a dry sense of humor that he didn't show before. Just case in point, yesterday when asked about how happy the Sharks were for Giovanni Smith scoring a goal, Ryan said, yeah, everyone was happy. Everyone was pumped about it. And oh, they were also really happy about the pass that Giovanni received on the goal. Wink, wink.
I wonder who that did. Yeah, I wonder who that was.
And then I also talked with Ryan about the neck guard story.
Interesting.
And he also had just a lot of insight into it. And so I think it'll be interesting to talk with Ryan about just how players sort of evolve with media and they get more comfortable, and they get more comfortable with themselves in a Sharks locker room or in a Barracuda locker room if they end up there. And so I think that's interesting because I think Ryan is now 32.
Yep.
And he was when I dealt with him, and my colleague when he dealt with him, he was a older rookie. Right, a guy who just was trying to do his best to stay in the NHL, and so Ryan's played his games and he's gotten comfortable, and so I think that's a kind of a cool thing to talk with him about. So
He must have learned it somewhere between. He played in New York. He played in Vegas.
He's played 300 NHL games there. I mean, since the Sharks waived him, right? That he went to the Stanley Cup Final with the Golden Knights. I think Blackhawks, Calgary, the Rangers, and I think he's been in the playoffs too.
Yeah, even during when he got waived, I remember thinking, like, I don't think he does anything wrong. Like, he really was good then too. He's not like, he's never been spectacular, but I was sad about the waiving at the time, 5-6 years ago, whatever that was. Just because he was pretty good. I mean, the Sharks were a much better team than they are now, for sure. But, I was a little upset about it then, but I'm happy he's back, and I think it's good that he played so well this week. But
he ended up being a pretty good 4C for the Golden Knights, and now it looks like he is a pretty good 4C for the Sharks.
Yep. All right. So our answer to who should be called up? No, we're not sure, but we anticipate Gushin and maybe Bortolo.
Maybe
they just roll with 11 forwards and 7D and then we're wrong.
No, I don't think they'll do that, but I think they do need a third line center because I don't know if they want to move Carpenter up.
Because he's comfortable and he's playing well.
Also too, you got to be careful, and we'll talk about this a little bit, about not writing players off too much. That when players are put in positions that they're not used to, it's not fair to expect them to produce. Like, if you put Carpenter at 3C and suddenly expect him to play like 16 minutes a night, that's not fair to him, because that's not who he is right now. He's pretty solid where he's at. And so, yeah, so I think Cunningham makes sense because Cunningham can take on the minutes even if he's not as accustomed to playing center.
Another guy this week that has had an up and down week, I think, but overall played well, was William Eklund, our young Swedish prince, William Eklund. He had a very brief, very confusing benching moment, I'll say. It kind of looked like it was related to an injury on another player. And then it was confirmed after the game by you and Sharks Media that no, that was a real benching, that Quinn kind of sat him down for a few specific plays during the Florida game that were less than ideal. And I think overall it wasn't a very strong period by Eklund that first period. I remember him bobbling like a ton of plays. His handling wasn't great. And then he made some ill-advised pass in the middle of the neutral zone. But so Eklund got benched. And then what was his response or what was the response by the Sharks about it?
Well, I wouldn't call it. It wasn't confusing. I just wasn't sure about it because it didn't last because by the six, obviously it was basically just to reset if you guys missed it or whatever. With about 8 minutes left, both Eklund and Zetterlund had turnovers that led to Ryan Lomborg scoring against Florida, and it made it 1-0. And then Eklund's next shift was 6 minutes later on the fourth line. Also on that shift too, the one that Lomborg scored, Eklund got plastered by Lomborg.
Yeah.
he got decked there, but, I didn't see Eklund leave for the locker room or really being talked to that much, like by a trainer. And so that's usually the sign of it doing concussion spotting or whatever. He would go into the room if a concussion spotter was like, oh, this guy's not looking like himself, you know, send him to the room. Or the Sharks trainer would be like, yeah, you got to go into the room. He didn't go into the room as far as I wasn't watching him specifically, but I didn't notice anybody going to the room. So Hoffman took a couple of shifts in his place up with Zetterlund and Hurdle. And right actually before the shift that Eklund came back with the fourth line with about 2 minutes to go, the previous line out there was the Hurdle line. So to me, it wasn't that confusing, just in that sense that, like, well, he clearly is being skipped over. He looks healthy and he's being skipped over.
Sure.
But then I wasn't 100% sure because, again, he started the next period with Hurdle again. And I didn't ask after the game because that's a bit of a micro thing to ask after the a loss. Just the fans might care a lot, but like just micro focusing on something like that after a 5-3 loss is that's usually something that you wait the next day. Also, too, if a guy wasn't benched, right? You don't want to. I don't want to make myself look bad by asking that question with the cameras on. And the coach may not want to make the player look bad too. He might want to keep it to some degree private, not lay out the player on TV, right? There's differences there too. That's another media thing too, in terms of you ask questions sometimes a little differently when the cameras are on as opposed to when they're not. I had learned that early on in my career. So actually, if you're curious why sometimes the questions on the Sharks post game are the way they are, I'll get into more in the future. But there are reasons for it, though. I'll just say that, like, I definitely get better answers and I ask more specific penetrating questions after a practice. But anyway, though,
emotions aren't as high. Yeah,
that's a big part of it too. Yes, that's a great point too. Yeah, a coach may not, you know, Quinn is usually pretty calm, so you probably could do it with him. But like, I've definitely dealt with coaches before, Gerard Gallant, where after a loss, if you kind of try to pinpoint one player as if you're. Even if your intention isn't to blame this one player, but you're kind of pulling that player from the crowd, kind of spotlighting that player in a bad way because you're asking about some mistake he made or something, right? A coach might not like that, and if you look at it from their point of view, understandably so. A guy like Gallant specifically, I found he was kind of like one of the guys in a way, like he was. the locker room, the team thing, like he didn't want to kind of lay out any of his guys in the media. And particularly after a game, after a loss, which he felt very, he was a very emotional kind of coach, right? Mm-hmm. Was definitely the wrong time to ask him about, why did you bench William Eklund for, you know, 8 fucking minutes? You know, that's probably, what do you say? Yeah, I sat him for 8 fucking minutes.
Yeah, like, I don't, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
you could have, yeah, you're right. I think maybe just letting it rest a little bit and then getting the story later made a little bit of sense.
Yeah, yeah, and something like that, because it's not like he benched him like the whole game. If he had sat Eklund like for 50 minutes, then that becomes a big story relative to the Sharks, you know, not sure. A big story in like the sports landscape, but a big story.
He could have also thought maybe Sharks he's Nation. A little dinged up. Maybe he needed a couple extra minutes and just said, you're right in the fourth line for this one.
Sure,
you know, made
sure,
the decision
sure.
as a coach. That's
yeah, it. No, that definitely was possible. I mean, I didn't know for sure that he got benched, but what if Eklund was healthy, why would he go out with the fourth line? Like he would have specifically had to get like right after Hoffman's last shift with 3 minutes left, like he'd be like, hey coach, I'm feeling good now. And they're like, okay, you haven't played in 5 minutes, just go out with the fourth line then. I mean, that's possible, of course, right? But sure. But anyway, so you know, I was taking you sort of behind the scenes of sort of the
you don't want the
why
the,
you ask, why you don't, and that sort of thing. Yeah, when you do, when you don't, and all that stuff.
Don't remember specifically, the Oilers media member that questioned Leon Draisaitl and called him pissy after a game. I don't know who that was. That was a very big quote for a while. You don't want to cross that. Like, you don't want to single out players in a way like that to a coach or to the players themselves. Like, I don't know. There is some kind of nuance there.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when a player is being pissy, I guess you can say it to him on
why are you
camera.
Being pissy?
But you know, though, that's going to last, though. Like, so if you're fine with that as a reporter, well, just know that moment's going to live sort of forever, right?
Yeah.
As opposed
to
talking
on the San Jose Hockey Now podcast,
right?
You know?
Right. Instead of talking to a player in private or whatever, and just sort of ask him, you know, what's going you. It sort of depends on your approach. If you want to be sort of just provoke kind of everybody, and that's sort of your approach, or if you maybe want to get better answers, like more penetrating, kind of. It just sort of depends on your approach, I guess. But anyway, though, with Eklund, though, overall, just on the benching itself, another play too that Quinn himself mentioned was the very first shift of that Florida game, where it looks like actually it's a Hotiuk's error. But if you watch off the faceoff, though, like Eklund just lets Reinhart, who Eklund should kind of get in front of a little bit. Basically, Reinhart has a clear path off the faceoff to Ahotiuk.
Yeah.
And so he disrupts Ahotiuk. And yeah, you love Ahotiuk to make a play faster and whatever. That's on him a little bit. But Eklund's got to do more in terms of subtle interference. He can't just leave his defenseman basically on an island there. And so anyway, Ahotiuk turns it over, and Reinhart, I'm not sure who the other Panthers player was, but they have a clear-cut 2-on-1, 4 seconds, 5 seconds into the game that Blackwood makes a big save on. But that's the kind of thing that will get the coach's attention. And Eklund said, I asked Eklund privately too, same kind of thing, you know, but I asked Eklund the next day, like, was there a message being sent? Mm-hmm. And Eklund's like, yeah. You know, there was. He didn't really specify the plays, but you can look back on the tape and you can figure it out. I think the big picture conversation about this is this brought up for a lot of the fans, it seemed like, on Twitter, and I know that's just one part of the fan base, but everyone goes back to, you know, David Quinn does not know how to coach young players. He ruined Lafreniere and Kako, et cetera, right? And I've made my feelings clear about that before. I've written articles actually looking at all the Rangers young players that flourished under David Quinn.
Yeah, Adam Fox,
Pavel Buchnevich.
Buchnevich,
yeah. Sorry about that, Buchnevich. And actually, I talked with Pavel. I'm a story that I'm working on, and I want to be careful about sort of being like also like the the David Quinn hype train too. The Sharks are 3-13-1. That's the reality of it, right? Quinn does have a part in that. There's no doubt about that. And I, even though I asked him the question about his job security, I also had, there are actually articles I had queued up already, kind of, if you'll believe it. Mike Sullivan talking about David Quinn, because they're very, very good friends all the way back to college. And Jack Eichel talking about David Quinn too. I interviewed Jack in October when the Golden Knights started the season, or when the Sharks started the season with the Golden Knights at home. And I just was saving it for the next Vegas game. And Sullivan obviously talked before the Pittsburgh, before the 10-2 shellacking there. And so anyway, so I'm be low. I want to be careful about that too. I'm not trying to say that Quinn is the greatest player coached with young players. I would guess that you know, we heard reports of Noel Gregor asking for a trade. We're not really sure if that's true or not, but Gregor did get yo-yoed a bit last year in terms of not being a lineup. Gregor complained about not great communication, which is supposed to be a Quinn sort of a trademark.
Sure.
And so Gregor did walk back those comments, but Gregor also said it in the first place. So I'm not trying to tell you that Quinn is going to be the perfect coach for your Eklund, your Will Smith, or whatever, that sort of thing, right? But I also want to avoid lazy narratives about Kako and Lafreniere. And
look turns at out the, Kako's the full not picture. Very good.
Right, turns out Kako may not be very good. Lafreniere looks like he's turning around a little bit, but they definitely weren't very good when they were 18 and 19, though. And they definitely didn't belong on a team that was trying to win, rebuilding, but trying to win. Panarin was you know, they had signed Panarin and guys like that. So they definitely, by David's last year, they were trying to win. And they weren't good enough to be. You know, people talked about, oh, you got to put him on a power play and stuff like that. I mean, you can, but you'll lose more games. And ignoring.
I think that's a really good. Well, just like the whole benching with Eklund, not to interrupt you, sorry. But
of course.
It's just kind of like shows you the development of what a toxic forward is, because he's lining up against, Sam Reinhart's right there, probably one of the hottest goal scorers in the NHL. Yep. And what Eklund has to do isn't something that's like, it has nothing to do with how skilled Eklund is or how many like slick passes he can do or his moves or his skating. It's just like a hockey play. It's just like, you got to get in the way of him. have to like be that recognized that guy's really hot right now and he needs to be obstructed a little bit. Like,
well, it's not even about how hot he is though, right? It's just that
that's a true top adult line.
NHL player.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. It's like that's a top line in the NHL right now. And like that's the development of a top six player. It's the not just like how skilled they are or whatever, how good they are on the power play. It's the subtle things and your ability to line up against one of the better lines in the NHL right now. So it's not like, and I think it speaks to like Eklund in general that he is growing through this, and I think he's getting better almost every game. It seems like there are ups and downs, but it seems like he's getting better and better as it goes on. So I don't know. I didn't mind the benching, as it were. I would have minded if he benched him the whole game, but
I thought that was a good thing actually that Quinn did. That Eklund has been a player that overall I think the Sharks have been happy with, Quinn has been happy with, and that sort of thing, right? He's not a player that's in and out of the doghouse like a LeBanc, right? Sure. Where maybe I don't know this for a fact, but maybe for Quinn, benching LeBanc for a period just doesn't seem to affect much. And sure. But maybe though, a period for Eklund is all he needs to kind of get Eklund's attention. And so that's why you try a period first and then see what happens. I think William did play a better game after that first period too. The whole line did. It's part of the article I wrote was called The Education of William Eklund. And actually going back to my conversation with Buchnevich, which I will work on at some point. Buchnevich said that Quinn scratched him multiple times too.
Sure.
And Buchnevich said that for him, like, you just said that it depends on the player. For some players, they get, you know, it works.
True.
And some players, it doesn't, which makes sense. You know, some players are more respond. Maybe some players need to be more coddled or need the love, and that's fine. Some players are just different, right? Like every player is different, has different personalities. So I'm not criticizing a player that maybe needs a little more of a softer touch or whatever, right? But for Buchnevich, it worked though. And one of the things I'm going to close with Buchnevich actually is that Buchnevich, the main thing that Quinn did for Buchnevich is that he started trusting Buchnevich defensively and he started using him on a PK. And you can look at the numbers. Buchnevich was never a PK player before Quinn, but Quinn saw something that he liked in Buchnevich to try him there. And now Buchnevich, I think, is thought to be. I asked actually both Quinn and Craig Berube this, a very underrated defensive two-way player. Sure. Berube raved about just the little things that he does, little things like getting in the way of a Sam Reinhart, which I would imagine is something that is Buchnevich would do on a consistent basis there. And so it worked. And it's not going to work for every player. It's not going to work for every young player. But again, though, you know, the lazy narratives. Oh, David Quinn ruins young players. Okay, Adam Fox, Buchnevich. I didn't even get to, you know, because when you bring up Adam Fox, people are always like, oh, well, he won a Norris. He was an exceptional player. You can't ruin that. How about Lindgren? Right? Yeah. At that same year, Lindgren was Fox's regular partner. Lindgren's a young player. Lindgren is still playing at a pretty high level. And so, again, it's a case-by-case basis.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, Adam Fox, there was a whole thing with his signing and how they acquired him, but they only did have to spend like a second round pick to get him. I mean, I think he wanted to go to the Rangers, so it doesn't really matter. It wasn't like he was, you know, a superstar before Quinn anyway. So anyway, but this whole episode has a theme of like, don't judge a book by its cover,
or
don't pass judgments too quickly. And I think maybe we do pass a little bit of judgment on Quinn a little bit too easily, just because we want somebody to blame and the figurehead of the Sharks.
It's easy to blame the coach. And look, again, that's why I asked Quinn the question after Pittsburgh game, 0-10-1. Giving up 10 goals in back-to-back games, that wasn't acceptable to me, not as like I wasn't a fan, but just in terms of that can't happen. And clearly Mike Greer agreed with that because he had a team meeting with the team, on 2 days later. So, but on the other hand though, so that was not acceptable. And the bar that we talked about that Greer has set for Quinn right now, Quinn and the team are fulfilling that, I think, in terms of being competitive, pushback, and also just playing with more structure. They won some games. They're still heavily outshot, but they are making it a harder. They're not allowing as many just grade A chances. They're boxing out better. They're not allowing as many odd man rushes. They're not sort of looking disengaged from the play in the game, even when they're losing. So I think if Quinn does that, then he's doing what he should do with this team, which we didn't expect a whole lot of to start this year. We just, you know, we're not going to tolerate getting beat by an average of 7-6-5 goals a game. But just compete.
Yeah, and that's honestly, I was calling for Quinn to be fired after the second 10-something loss, because I was like, this is the most lifeless Sharks team I've ever watched. And then Greer had some accountability afterwards, and like, we'll try to hold the players accountable for what's going on as well. And ever since then, it does feel like a little bit of a different team. We're still a losing team. We're still a lottery team, or the worst team in the NHL.
Hey, they're a good 500 since the Pittsburgh game, all right? Good 3-3, all right?
Good. Yeah, we're not the embarrassment that ends up on SportsCenter every night.
Exactly.
And that's what I want. Anyway, so Eklund got done. He's actually been playing very well. He's had 4 points in his last 6 games. Yeah, he's looked like a good, you know, staple next to Hurdle. I think
Quinn said that he's thought that's part of the reason why he put Eklund right back out there on the top line during the beginning of the second period, that he's played well. And so you want to give that guy a chance who's played well in general. one period was standing, another shot to be out there. And I think Eklund has responded so far, and you know, had a goal last night against St. Louis, and then did some good things in the Florida game after he got sat down.
Good play, so, good pass in the neutral zone. I think that sprung a breakaway. Was it Granlund's breakaway?
It was Granlund's breakaway. Yeah. So I think though, you touched on a great point though, that we are sort of talking about not writing things off too quick on this episode, which I didn't really think about. And I want to say if Quinn is able to go 500 the rest of the way with this team, I'm voting him for Jack Adams.
Yeah, he gets Jack Adams.
I'm just joking. Media doesn't get a vote on Jack Adams. So just less anyone take me seriously there. So
they're like, Shang is corrupt. He's gonna vote for a coach that's under five. Yeah. Anyway,
I've actually joked with Bob Bugner before after he got let go that getting 77 points out of his last Sharks team, that they should build a statue for him out of SAP Center. So
all on the back of like a really good penalty kill, I bet. That's probably what
that was a big part of that year, mm-hmm. right? Because that was before Carlson's revival. I mean, it was really the Timo and Tommy show that season, right?
Yeah, so. And the penalty kill being like the best in the NHL for some reason.
For a while, yeah.
Yeah, for a while. That's weird times. Yeah. All right, so another player that we're hoping has a little bit of, or we, I should say, I'm hoping, has a little bit of a long leash in his NHL debut this season is Daniil Gushchev, our 5'8" Russian prince. I don't know what they're called.
Russian Dynamo.
Russian Dynamo. He has played two games since his call-up, which was honestly a little bit of a surprise for me. He's been really doing very well in the Barracuda. I just didn't expect them to kind of like what they did last year, where they kept down, Eklund and Bortolo and all these guys, despite some of them going on like good streaks and being very productive night in and night out for the Barracuda. They kept him down. So I honestly did not expect Daniil to get a call up, but we are dealing with a significant amount of injuries right now. So it makes some sense. I think we should talk a little bit about Daniil's game. I think there's some goods and some good and bad. And I think people need to be a little bit, they can do whatever they want. People can do whatever they want, but I would say be a little bit measured on what you use call success for this call up for Gushchev, because I don't anticipate he's going to be here the whole season. I anticipate this will probably be a shorter learn on the job kind of thing until he goes back to the Barracuda. So try and take out what you think he's doing well, and then also try and highlight, or in your brain at least, what do you think he's not doing so well, and just take it for what it is. He's an exciting player, but he is also a 5'8" offensive winger. So it's hard to make the NHL at that size. So there's things that he's got to improve on to be able to stick in a lineup, I think. But Shang, what were your thoughts on Daniil's game before I rant about what was good and bad about Daniil? In my opinion, at least.
I just thought he was okay overall. Not bad. Not necessarily good. I think for him to stay up, it's not just about putting up points on the board, which would be nice, of course, but he just has to... he has to create a lot of chances. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this, and I use William Eklund as an example. Early in the season, right, Eklund wasn't really producing. But relative to the Sharks, the Sharks were really anemic offensively to start mm-hmm. the season, right? And obviously that's going to affect Eklund, because Eklund is dishing it off to people that weren't scoring, right? And sure. So, but relative to the team, though, the first dozen games or so, Eklund was one of the better or higher producers of offense, of good chances, of slot passes in dangerous areas, things like that, right? And so he was, relative to the team, creating a lot. And since the team has started playing better, and I think it also has helped Eklund that he's playing with Tomas Hertl too, he's been even more prolific, which is exactly what you want to see, right? And now all the chances that he's created or been a part of, involved in, right, is it's now finally turning into actual goals and assists, yeah, actual production on the board. And so with Guschen, I think that the what you're looking for is him to be creating a volume of chances, not just a couple here and there, not a fancy a move like he made the between the legs, right? Which is great. That's perfect.
Thought it was fine. Cute, but it wasn't
great. Whatever, yeah, you know. But like if you make a move like that to create your own shot 6 times in a game, 3 times in a game, okay, now we're kind of talking that you're kind of creating something out of nothing multiple times each game. And so I'm looking for some of that, not just a circus play like that, but just general, just creating offense, making a couple slick passes that lead to chances, or even just the quiet plays. So you're just advancing the puck to the next guy right on the tape in stride, things like that. Right. So I'm looking for a lot of that. There are going to be the defensive shortcomings. There's going to be the strength thing, which is a big deal. I know people don't like to hear it. Oh, small players are you know, short kings, right? I'm all about short kings too, being one myself. But at the NHL, that's tough. If you're not quick enough, if you're not strong, you can be short, but you got to be stronger. You got to be quicker. And I do think that Daniil has to work on those things. But I think in the end, though, how I judge him is just strictly really on not even production, like I said. It's just creating a lot of chances, being around a lot of offense, contributing to a lot of offense. And if he does that, then the points will start to come.
Yeah, that's the hope, is that he gets a long enough runway that he has a few games where you can see it building, right? Like he can see more and more chances coming. Mm-hmm. And even if the points aren't coming, that they keep him up because they see that. That's the hope. I worry when people do start coming back from injury that they might be like, well, the chances are coming, but the points aren't, so you're going down. That's my only argument. I don't know. It might also just be they sent him down because there are better NHLers coming back from injury soon.
Here's a question for you. If Daniil repeats his last two games, he basically performs at exactly the same, about the same level for until Sturm comes back. Let's even throw in Couture, even though that's way in the future. Barabanov, Barabanov's a realistic one because Barabanov has been skating. Broken finger obviously doesn't affect that anyway, but he's been skating with a glove on, so he's getting there. And Quinn also called him ahead of the curve. And Barabanov was 4 to 6 weeks the initial prognosis, and I think we're at week 3, so we're getting close to week 4. So maybe so. Okay, so Barabanov comes back. Sturm comes back, Guschen plays at the same level. Is that quite good enough to stay up here? What do you think?
No, I don't think so.
I agree.
I think the my bigger issues is kind of like you're saying, where the advancement of the puck and the puck, like the control of the puck, the putting the puck in an area where your team's going to keep it kind of thing, and making the simple play to do that. Because Guschen has a very, very bad habit of like holding onto the puck to try and create a very specific play in his brain rather than just chipping it down the boards or just like moving it on to the next guy. And it creates some very bad turnovers. It's been that way in the Barracuda, and he did it once or twice in his last game with the Sharks too. So if that keeps up, I don't think there's a way you can keep him in the NHL, because it doesn't affect play in an offensive manner. But there are moments when it's kind of clicking for Guschen and it looks really, really good. So I'm hoping that he kind of is heading more towards that direction, but because he is exciting, he has it all working for him in his brain. I think he can actually do some, and we see it in the AHL all the time. He's their leading scorer and all that, because he is probably their best offensive player. It's just got to translate a little bit better in the NHL. I was surprised about some of the things that he did well, though. I mean, defensively, he's not a poor defensive player. I think he makes some costly turnovers, but that doesn't make him a poor defensive player most times. He gets in the way, he gets his stick in lanes, he knows where the players are trying to advance the puck. He's not lazy in getting back from the offensive zone at all. He's got good endurance, he comes back very well. So for a guy that's small, he's not like he's poor defensively. Or not trying defensively. He's just, you're right, he's not very physical. So he can't it's hard for him to get the puck off of anyone or keep control of the puck all the time on the boards. So I don't know. There's pluses and minuses with Gushin that I've like seen for years. I've watched Gushin ever since he was drafted. So like USHL, OHL, AHL, now NHL, which is great. He's made progression, but there's still the same things that he's been since then. So I'm hopeful, but it's going to be a little while, I think.
I think, like I said, I think the minuses are fine because Gushin's not going to grow 4 inches and he can get stronger, but it's probably not going to happen in season. It might be next season. Right.
Yeah.
And all that could be passable if he creates enough offense. We talk about this all the time, right? We talk about this with Bortolo, with Merkley, good plays outweighing the bad plays.
Yeah.
And we talk about with Carpenter, the net zero, right? And so with a guy like Carpenter, there's not a lot of good plays, but there's also not a lot of bad plays. And you have your net zero most of the time. And there have probably, I remember more good Carpenter plays in his 10 games or so than bad ones.
I remember almost none except for the good ones. So I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like you don't, yeah. And
you don't see them. Yeah.
You don't remember them. You don't see them. It doesn't lead directly to a goal against. I'm not saying that Ryan Carpenter is a perfect player by any stretch, but again, it's just math. So the equation for Carpenter is we talk about net zero, but actually the equation is probably a little bit positive at least, right? Not a huge positive, but a little positive. The equation for Bortolo we've talked about, it was overall a negative. This is why he's not here. Gushin, we have to see. The jury is out, but if you can create enough offense, and again, I'm not talking about just he's got to score or he's got to put up this many assists or goals to stay up here. If he just creates chances for himself and his teammates, I think that's going to be his best argument. I mean, there's even a chance that or a possibility that he can be productive, right? He can score, let's say, like next 8 games, he scores like 6 points, 5 points. But the team sees that as, so he's producing, he's putting up points, right? But they're sort of like empty calorie points. Right, like
I don't know. I think it's hard to take any points right now.
Oh no, but you know, but that's when you're kind of assessing a player, though.
Yeah,
if you're assessing a player, though, what is ultimately more valuable? I mean, I think ultimately you go with the player that long term, like, is creating a lot of chances. Yeah. That's a guy that's going to be a sustainable offense. Whereas a guy with the empty calorie points, Jacob Peterson last year. Sure. And so with Gushin, like even the assist he had, right? That's not what I'm talking about in terms of creating a lot of offense, right? Like it's secondary ish. It's not quite what I'm talking
about. All he did was kind of touch the puck forward. Like he came off the boards and he like nudged it a touch, but he did also made that play, like happened to the offensive zone. Like it was kept in, I think, through him originally as well. So, okay. And he did, I think in that first game, that whole like creating more chances than you're giving up, I think he did. The second game, he just didn't. So that's why I'm like a little bit hesitant to just send him down off of one game. And we should also note the Sharks did send him down, but we think it's just to play on the Barracuda for tonight or for tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yeah.
But I think the first game he did, he had that really good shot from the slot. He had a couple of good things, and obviously the assist, which was not all him in the offensive zone, but it was, you know, affected by him. So I don't know. I just, his second game to me offensively wasn't very good. He tried a couple of things and just wasn't really working
for him. He looked maybe, and you mentioned this, that maybe the nerves got to him. There was one play, I don't remember what period, I had it in my game notes. I think he had like Granlund wide open or something like that.
And that was a third period.
It's a pretty, it's for an NHL player, it's a routine pass. I mean,
yeah, it was an easy pass.
A fourth liner could have made that pass, and he just sort of fumbled it. I don't know if it was one of those things where his eyes got a little too big. Like he got too excited that a guy was that open.
Oh, I know. It was really bad.
And so that could happen too. But, and I'm not saying that Gushin should get sent down. Like I said, I think he's just been okay. And the Sharks have a lot of injuries now, so it's fine. He hasn't been bad. Overall, I wouldn't say he's hurt the team so far. I don't think so. So that's good.
Their line was the weakest line, though, in the 5-1 win. Like, they could tell, I think Quinn didn't really trust them to go out there all the time against whoever they were lined up against.
And that's not just on Gushin.
Sure.
I mean, Duclair struggled the last game, coming back from strep throat and losing weight. He looked like his timing was off. Granlund, as we've discussed, has been very up and down this season. I think that's fair to say. So it's not all on Daniil, but. I think that the point stands, though, that, and I guess we agree on that, that for him to stay when the Sharks get a little healthier, even this not very good Sharks team, I think he does have to show a little bit more. And like I said, the reason why I brought up like the empty calorie points example is that I think it's more important that he, even if he has just like 3 points in 8 games or 2 points, like Eklund was at a certain point of season, if Gushin is creating that much more offense than his teammates or most of his teammates, like Eklund was, he's going to be safe. It's not just about
because he's not also stats, a liability defensively, like
Bordeaux. Right. He's not killing them at least, right? Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see if we can get to that point. And I think too, another question, and this is the question we can't really answer, but we thought, you know, what is better for his development? Is it better for his development to dominate the AHL this year? Because last year he had a good season, but so far this season looks like he has taken a step forward, at least in the AHL. And so maybe it's good for his confidence to go down there and to mash down there instead of sort of struggling in the NHL and trying to survive and come in, you know, next year with a more confident frame of mind. That is possible. Some players, on the other hand, can take the challenge, NHL challenge, and survive and get better. I think Eklund is a guy like that, which is why I've always advocated, even when he was 18 and 10 pounds lighter, that he could do it because his hockey brain and his resolve could help him get better with the heavier competition. I'm not so sure about Gushin. I think that's one that I would defer to the Sharks a bit, just because they know him more internally than we do.
Yeah, I think my only argument, I think he will get sent down. I think that's the first thing, is I think unless he somehow does amazing and scores a hat trick next game or whatever and keeps it going, which is possible. You never know. Never judge a book too early by the cover.
Right.
That's the whole point of the episode. But I think what I like about him being in the NHL is he's playing a little bit different than he does in the AHL. Like like in the AHL, he's the guy. Like he's the guy carrying the puck into the zone all the time. Like he's the dude ripping shots in the power play all the time. Like he's the guy that's your number one player. Whereas here, he's not a role player, but he's one of three on a line, and he's got to do more on the boards than he does in the AHL. He's got to do more work that he's going to have to do to make it the NHL anyway. And I don't think he's going to do that stuff on the Barracuda. But his offense does still need to come around to be at an NHL level anyway. So. There's an argument for either one.
Basically. Yeah. I don't have a definitive opinion on that, on what's sort of best for him. Because, like I said, it could just be good for him, just his confidence, even if he's not doing as many of the things that you're talking about in AHL, some of the little things, right? That he goes down there and he scores 70 points or whatever, AHL All-Star, and he has sort of that sky-high confidence going into the next season. Yeah. That might be good for him. It really, again, depends on the player. I think some players do need that and some players don't. And so,
But I'm excited more about the stuff that he's able to do, like physically in the NHL right now, because I was really worried that he wouldn't be able to do, like he won't be able to steal pucks or any of that. And he's done at least some of that in the last couple of games. So more excited about that than I am anything else.
Well, those are the things that help keep him around. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I am still happy that the Sharks recalled them. That's why we're wearing the jersey this week.
Yeah, but that's a Carlson jersey. When are you getting your Gushin jersey?
You know, I think I don't want to put an if on him because I'm going to jinx him.
testing soon, your faith.
Soon is the answer.
But you said Eklund first, though.
I do. I mean, Eklund jersey Dan first, and then Gushin. I need Eklund and Gushin.
You gotta really put your Sharks fandom on the line and get a Cardwell jersey or something like that.
Ooh, a Cardwell jersey. I do like Cardwell. He's been fine in the AHL. He's actually been pretty good. Like, if you're looking for, not pretty good. He's been better than like some of the other older Barracuda players that have been there
First
for a little
pro
while.
season, so
Yeah.
yeah, you got to give him give him that.
He's been that way. I mean, his OHL tape was pretty characteristic of a guy that has a pro style game. So that's why I was excited to see him on the Barracuda, and he's doing pretty well. Anyway, that's a quick Cardwell update. he's gonna make the show one day too. I just don't know in what fashion, but he's gonna be in the NHL at least for a couple of games there.
Well, name of his podcast
Is the show bound? Yeah,
is Showbound, so.
we got to get him on here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, he'll be a great guest.
Talk podcasts. All right, we have three more players to talk about this week, just as we wrap up our theme of not judging a book too early. Mike Hoffman.
Oh yeah, okay. I thought you were
Unless
gonna
you had more
skip.
about Gushin.
No, I thought you were gonna skip Mike, so I wanted
Oh,
to make
well, we
sure
could just
that.
we can mention it really briefly, and then we'll get to our two main topic after. But Mike Hoffman, good on you, buddy.
Yeah, 3 goals in the last 2 games. Obviously he's not gonna score at this exact rate, but I do like the things I'm seeing. He's going to the net. That was his first goal, and he's shooting more. I think even the Florida game, he started off with a bad angle shot, which most times you may not want your player to take, but if it's a guy who is a shooter first, who is not shooting enough, then
Sure.
you like that attitude. And also too, that's one thing that he can still wire it. So even from a bad angle, it's still a shot to contend with, a dangerous shot to some degree. And so yeah, I think and I may have written Mike off too quickly. If I'm to be honest, I've said on the show that I think his next stop could be another league, and not an NHL. But if he can get himself back, I know he's also had a couple of tough years with Montreal.
Sure.
So if he can get himself back into the 20-ish goal range, maybe he becomes an asset to trade at the trade deadline. I think that ultimately Sharks fans, I mean, that's sort of what you're hoping for, that all these guys, yeah, you
Yeah,
want to lose
lead to
games and
like
have to
fifth round
have
picks.
yeah there's a balance here, of course, right? You want to be bad, but you don't want to be so bad that you get to the trade deadline, and like I've said, Anthony Duclair has 9 goals, Mike Hoffman has 2 goals, Kevin LeBanc has 17 points at the trade deadline. No one's
I don't
gonna
think he's
want
going to
any
make
of these guys.
17.
Oh
So.
yeah, he's off to a rough start for sure. But you want to see all these guys being productive, and sure, losing games is fine too. But competitive, productive, you want to see that. That's ultimately like the happy medium. The Sharks are doing that right now. And so yeah, so we'll see if it lasts for Hoffman. But I will say, I'll give him this credit too, that he has been yo-yoed up and down lines all year by Quinn. He's been scratched. He's been on the fourth line. He's been on the power play, the first unit. He's been on the second unit. He's been off the power play. And I haven't really seen any sign of him showing any discontent.
Yeah.
I think he knows that his career is sort of on the line right now after a couple of tough years in Montreal. But he's also a guy that, of course, historically has averaged about 30 goals a year. And at least his I did the math, 2014-21 full 82 game pace, he was at 30 goals. And so he's a guy that's used to scoring and a lot, and used to being on the first power play unit, and used to being on top lines. And I haven't seen any sort of a bad attitude from him. And
Sure.
granted, I'm not, you know, I'm not inside privately with the Sharks locker room, so you never know.
Yeah.
But as far as I've seen though, he's done a good job of it. Quinn complimented how he's kind of taken things, and they've had a lot of talks,
Sure.
and so hopefully he can keep up.
Yeah, it's I don't know Mike personally, and but it seems like when Mike Hoffman gives a shit on the ice, he actually does
Well,
care.
I
Like
think that's a bit harsh. I think
his
he
play
has
looks like
care,
it though. Yeah.
but maybe
It's good.
he had to
The
add
past couple of
maybe
games.
a little more, just shoot more, maybe shoot from places that he may not like to, instead of waiting
Sure.
for like his shot, his one timer, right? And
Yeah.
just kind of shoot from everywhere, because that is probably still his greatest asset. And yeah, maybe skate a little harder, get his nose a little dirtier, right? So I'm not gonna say he didn't care, early in the season, but I think he is definitely like we said, getting his nose a little dirtier. First of all, against Florida, just packing the net. So
starting to feel the, like, you're right. What if I do nothing this whole season? Like, what happens after this?
Well, I think it's a reality for any, a lot of the Sharks players, actually, right? A lot of the veteran Sharks players.
But I'm happy that it looks like he gives a shit. I'm sure he gave a shit the entire way, but I'm happy it looks like he does.
Yeah, I think we talk about how, like, we talked about, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, how Quinn gets like this kind of ragtag mix of young players and mercenaries together, right? And I think one of the ways that you get them all on the same page is that if you play well, it helps you personally, but by extension, it helps the team. Yeah. And so maybe that's something that Quinn has talked to his veterans about. Like, look, if you want to get off this ship, you're not going to get off of it by, I think what was Hoffman, zero goals in the first 16 games, right? You want to go somewhere where you have a chance for playoff hockey and to extend your career. You're not doing it with that kind of production when that's, you know, your trademark is production and goals, right? And so you might have to play a little grittier than you're used to, than you like. You may have to impress me from a lower line without having Tomas Hertl set you up, things like that, right? And so Mike has done that, and it's turned around for him a little bit, and hopefully he can ride this wave and keep his career going.
Yeah, and I just want to preface again, I don't know Mike personally, and I don't know what the play, like, I'm very sure he was like hot-dogging it on purpose. It wasn't a great play for the first 15 games, so I'm happy he's come out and shown that he still has a great looking shot, because two more guys that have done very well. Actually, it's been a couple of weeks coming for one of these guys, and then this one's really just been the last game that he really turned it on. But Kuhn and Zetterlund are our two last Sharks that we're going to talk about this week,
right? And I think the main thing I want to say is I think they're great examples of not judging players on small sample sizes. Obviously, Zetterlund with the Sharks last year, 22 games, went goalless, had just 3 assists, I think. And he got pretty good opportunity. His very first game after coming here for Timo Meier, he was put on the line with Tomas Hertl, actually, in Timo Meier's spot. I actually think, I don't remember this for sure, but I think he was given Meier's locker room stall too. I don't think that was on purpose. It just was, there was an open stall, right? Because Timo just got traded. And so, well, why not just put Zetterlund there? Because he's usually forwards and defense are on different sides of the room. Right.
Big shoes to fill. It's a big stall to fill. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it is sort of funny to kind of think about that though. Anyway, to Fabian's credit though, he's come back. Quinn has said this, and he's looked like it. I think everyone can agree that he's looked like a totally different player. I think in that Florida game, he had that perfect assist on the Hertl goal in the Florida game, right? And he was trying stuff and I asked him actually after the game the next day, I asked him, like, it seems like you're trying stuff that you wouldn't even try, you weren't trying the year before. And he agreed. And a lot of that is confidence. And a lot of that is also too, it's just kind of sticking to his strengths and knowing kind of who he is. That's one thing I've liked about him too this year, that he is a strong guy. So he takes the body first. You know, I know that early in the season when the Sharks were really struggling and there was talk about catching flesh, Quinn was very upset about that because the Sharks weren't doing that. They were worrying about the puck and trying to win the puck, and they weren't just taking out the guy in front of them and getting the body on the guy in front of them and then winning the puck. They were just trying to win the puck first, kind of alligator arming it, that sort of thing. Just try to win the puck, right? Zetterlund was definitely not doing that from game one. From game one, Zetterlund's been a guy that body first and then he worries about the puck. And Zetterlund also, too, is a really good example of a guy that you always talk about, like, oh, my God, I can't believe you put so-and-so on the fourth line, Bortolo, Gushin, or whatever. You're not giving him an opportunity. And I get that to some degree. You know, guys like that, their talents aren't going to shine on lines like that necessarily, right, without power play time, that sort of thing, right? But on the other hand, though, a really good player, starts there and shows what he's got, and he works his way up to the first line. And that's what Zetterlund did, right? Zetterlund started the season on the fourth line. And I'm not saying he's going to end up as a first line winger, but he worked his way up, right? He's been pretty consistently impressive, starting with the fourth line, and worked his way up. And now he's next to Tomáš Hertl. And on this team, he deserves to be next to Tomáš Hertl. And so I think he's a great example of that, of not using that crutch, like, oh, he's on the fourth line. I mean, there's some validity to it, but I think that is like an overused excuse for why prospects bust. Like, oh, they didn't get the opportunity. No, they just sucked. you know, they just weren't good enough if they weren't good enough for your NHL fourth line, there's a decent chance they may not be good with six more minutes a night. If they can't show their stuff in 10 minutes, right? It doesn't, again, with like Pablo Lagushin, it doesn't even matter about the production. It's about chances created and just showing something, right? And so anyway, so Zetterlund has done that all season. And so I've really, really enjoyed, if there's a kind of a surprise story of the Sharks here, I would say it could be him, that he has turned, you know, if you compare, again, I don't want to get too excited about, you know, cautioning myself about a small sample size, but
sure,
if he is more this player from the first 17 games this season, then he's a guy that's going to be a building block of the Sharks, a guy that maybe ends up more on a third line or something like that. But he's a guy that's going to be a part of your next playoff Sharks team at this rate. And so we'll see in the end if he's more this guy in the 17 games from this year or more the guy 22 games from last year, right, with the Sharks.
Yeah.
We'll see. But based on the scouts I've talked to who like him, that this is probably more who he is. And if this is who he is,
well built.
Yep.
Right? Like,
yep. Yeah,
a lot of scouts were saying like very good things about him.
Yeah. Very good things about him. Yeah. Not again, I don't want to inflate expectations. They weren't saying he was going to be a 25 goal scorer, whatever kind of guy, but they really liked his game. They liked his strength that we're seeing. Right. And they liked sort of the directness of how he played, which is how he's playing now. And so I think that's one great example. And I think Kunin is another great example of, again, not judging players too quickly. Obviously, Kunin struggled to start the season.
Sure.
He blew a lot of Willie Mecklin passes.
Yes, he did.
No doubt about that. But if you look at his track record, right, over the years, He's a guy that is consistent. You can kind of count on him to score if he's healthy, about 15 goals a year, which is pretty good. It's not something to sneeze at the NHL level. And so you look at that track record where he's consistently done that. And you also look at the positives of what he was doing, getting all the chances, which we talked about, right? Which is the skill unto itself, just being in the right place, which obviously we've seen with some of the goals he scored recently, just right in front of the net. And you don't see a lot of Sharks right there where Kunin consistently is. And even on, we talk about the Gushin chance, right? From the Florida game, that was Kunin being in front of the net.
Yep.
Getting the puck, being quicker to the puck than a defenseman. So establishing position on defenseman, being quicker to the puck than any other Panther, and then a quick pass to Gushin for Gushin's best chance in the first two games of the season. And so there's a good player in there too. And I think another part of not writing players off too is not writing them off when they don't produce in a position that maybe they're not the best suited for. We talked about Zetterlund last year being placed next to Tomáš Hertl right after the trade and getting Timo's spot in the locker room too, besides a spot on the line.
Yep.
And if a guy doesn't produce there, that's something you gotta slot guys in the right place. Guy like Ryan Carpenter, right? Carpenter has looked very good as your fourth line center. If he suddenly becomes your second line center and he doesn't produce, well, is that on Carpenter himself, or is that more on the team for not putting him in the right place? And I guess I am sort of contradicting myself because I talked about Zetterlund starting the fourth line and showing what he's got, kind of. But there is sort of a balance between those things, right? Where it's not always just the team didn't give him a chance to succeed. Sometimes it's just the prospect isn't very good. But sometimes too, yeah, you had to put players in the right place to succeed. And so if Kunin is on your first or second line, he's not producing, as much as you like for a guy in that position. Well, look at his competition on the Sharks. Like, is there anyone clearly that should be ahead of him? We talked about this with Kunin before, and at least you and I didn't really see anybody that clearly should be ahead of Kunin there. And so if he's not, if he's not producing in that position, maybe it's not all on the player. That sometimes it's the team construction, the roster construction, which falls on Mike Greer, and the team is not designed to make it to the playoffs. It isn't, right? And so but I do think on a playoff team that Kunin is, if you look at his, again, track record and all the other things he does besides pop in goals here and there, I think he's a pretty good third liner. I think a lot of teams would take him, a little expensive, but I think a lot of good teams, playoff teams, would take him, happy with him on your third line. And so that's a good player. And so that's not a player that you should write off because he's not scoring immediately. And I think also too, people forgot to, or people didn't really mention that Kunin hadn't played since January or December, actually, I think.
Yeah, that's right. He was injured.
Right. And so that's a long time off too. And so I think for a guy that brings a lot to the table and was blowing chances to start the season, there's no doubt. I'm happy to see him kind of turn it around. And again, same with Zetterlund too, a guy that I think a lot of the fan base had written off after that very, very tough start. Yeah. And I will run one lick victory lap here. I wrote a Zetterlund story over the summer about don't write him off. I wrote that for NBC, so you can find that story. And so I'm happy when guys like that sort of show that they shouldn't be written off, that there's talent there, and they just sometimes, in Zetterlund's case, no matter where he was placed on a line, he showed it. And in Kunin's place, I think Kunin's situation, maybe it's just he's had a nice little run here, obviously, and maybe some of those chances he got early in the season should have gone in. And so yeah, we're sort of balancing out all the chances that he's been getting. And so
I love Zetterlund's progression, like you mentioned. He went from fourth line all the way up, and he fits with the Eklund Hurdle dynamic very well, and I've talked about that before. Their line works just because they all do different but complementary things advance play, and they don't look overmatched most times, which is, you know, hard to say at the beginning of the season that, you know, every single line pretty much looked overmatched. Most of the time, their line doesn't look overmatched. They look at least even, sometimes a little negative, sometimes a little positive. But they are at least now producing as well. Like, the line, you know, Hurdle's getting more points. Eklund's got 4 points in six games. Zetterlund's got some points. They're producing. And I think Zetterlund's a big part of that, for sure.
They all are.
Yeah. And like you said, Kunin, I was a little frustrated with him just because he wasn't finishing in the beginning of the year, but he, you know, he, especially this last game, he just looked like a different player. I don't know why specifically he looked way more engaged and more dangerous offensively. But way more dangerous, I think is the way to put it.
They put him on the fourth line, and so he's probably at his best. He is a too good to be on your fourth line player. So you put him on the fourth line, give him fourth line matchups. He's actually going to mash a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, again, I think the sweet spot for him is probably your third line, and so I think that could be part of it.
He's probably going to be our third line center for the next game. It looks like. So.
We'll see. I'm curious what they do with that.
I think, this whole episode, it's kind of, you know, we make judgments on players really quickly, especially when the Sharks are doing this poorly. But sometimes it does take multiple weeks, multiple games, losings and winning streaks to really suss out what players are. And same with, you know, Gushtin getting called up. It's going to take a little while to see what he really is at the NHL level. And Hoffman, Kunin, Zetterlund, Eklund, to see just how productive they can be on this very poor Sharks team. But for overall, I'm happy this week. All right. Anything else to say, Shang? Let's get out of here.
I'm excited to see. I hope you're happy next week. So excited to see the jersey that you.
I got a few more in there.
How many jerseys do you have? We can do a slow reveal. So yeah, how many you got?
Ooh, I mean, I have like probably 15 jerseys, but Sharks jerseys specifically, I think I have 7, maybe. Wow. Six.
I didn't know. Okay. Probably. Okay. I'm not going to ask you. Like, I want the slow reveal. So last week you got a Burns, right? This week is a Carlson Stealth. So.
Yep. Carlson Stealth.
Okay.
You know, it's close to it. I think Daniil Gushin wore 68 in juniors.
So. No, he wore 66. I asked him that because he wore Lemieux's number. If you look at pictures with him with Muskegon.
Is it 66?
Yeah, 66. Muskegon had the Penguins scheme color.
It is 66.
The Penguins color scheme from Lemieux's last years with the Penguins, and Gushin's going in wearing 66. So I always found that hilarious. Like, that's a pretty confident kid.
Yeah, I don't know why we thought it was 68, but you're right, it was definitely 66.
Yeah, 68 is more of a Jager Czech thing, so.
yeah, or a Hoffman thing apparently.
Oh yeah, that's true. I'm not sure where Hoffman got. Actually, good question. Yeah,
I want to ask Daniil where his 75 came from, because he was drafted 76th. So is it like a subtle jab at like the 75 people drafted before?
I think his number was 66. I don't know this for a fact, but I think his number was 66, and the Sharks said, no way. He said, no.
Get a different number. But I wonder where the 75 came from. We can
Josh Hosang, right? Like he
got such
wearing water. 66 on a different team, right? So, I think Gushin saved whoever made that decision. I think Gushin saved himself the trouble by not putting it on with the Sharks.
Yeah, so I'll patch on a little six here, and then it'll be a Gushin jersey. Okay. But anyway,
I was gonna suggest though, to close off that when the Sharks are unhappy, maybe you should wear a paper bag.
Ooh,
making you unhappy.
Or a jersey of a different team. Ooh, I do have plenty of those too. Yeah, maybe paper bag. I don't know. We'll have to see. But I'm unhappy. Well, next
maybe I don't want you to wear paper bag for an hour and a half. That's not right. But that, yeah, you could sue me for that. But maybe to start the show to show, you know.
Yeah, that I'm embarrassed.
Yeah, to be a Sharks fan. I don't know. Wearing a different jersey, I think that'll be confusing for the audience. So.
True. All right, gang. We're gonna get out of here. Hope you guys have a good week. Bye.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. So start your free trial of SiriusXM today. Visit SiriusXM.com/believe.